You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who live, work, and minister in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and today I'm excited to talk to our guest, Pastor Nick Rogers. His ministry journey has definitely been one that I have found so interesting and so filled with all these kind of curious pockets of knowledge about rural communities and churches. We're going to hit everything from leadership to museums to Chamber of Commerce to kind of how we hire associate pastors, and we're just going to be all over the board. And I'm just so pumped for him to bless us with his wisdom, tell us his story. But the first thing I want to say is, Pastor Nick, how are you doing today, man?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic, Joe. Very, very grateful to be with you today. And so thankful and thankful for what you're doing for rural ministry and the advancement of rural ministry.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. Yeah, glowing encouragement. I find it funny because oftentimes people are like, man, that's a good podcast. I'm like, yeah, all I do is ask questions and let smart people talk. Like, that's the goal, you know? So, hey, but we are really excited to dive into your journey. Again, you are, in my opinion, full of just such fun wisdom, and the topics we got to dive into over the phone were just so engaging. And so, but let's start here, you know, with everybody. We love, you know, rural is a place of story, where you come from, where you're going. And so why don't you just give us the journey? You know, where'd you start in ministry? What were the stops along the way? What are you doing now? And kind of how that connects to the rural church.
Yeah, you bet. Well, for myself, I grew up in a convergence, like at the very southernmost part of the Midwest, and then deep south kind of hitting into it in northeastern Oklahoma. And so my first few years of life as a little kid, I grew up in a farming community with less than 500 people.
Nice.
My family had a farm there, at that time, four generations of farmers. And so we're grateful for that. So have that connection, and then from there we moved to a big city of 29,000 people.
Exactly.
And so I grew up from that moment, but went to. I was thinking through and hadn't thought this in a long time, but really we went to the same rural church for over a decade, if I'm not mistaken, or at least in my mind as a child and preteen time period. But I did want to throw this out, just kind of rural to me is not just geographical, but it's a mentality and a culture.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so in my world, even in a town of 29,000, you can't tell me that wasn't rural America.
Well, and most people, as soon as you slap certain labels on, if someone says I'm from blank Oklahoma, blank Montana, you know, like blank Kansas, you know, it's just feels like you're just kind of in the mix, you know, so carry on. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we had we did that. My dad had a just a miracle salvation story with Jesus on the construction site, and from there we ended up landing at a rural Assembly of God church. We do have some Baptist background in my extended family. We've got Pentecostal background extended family. And anyway, that's kind of the world that I grew up in, and I was able to go to church camps, and I just from 8 to 18, and you know, I'm kind of going through the highlights here, but I always loved being outside, outdoors. I was always around, how do I put this, work boots and God's word, you know.
There you go.
And so I was always around that, and in that I ended up getting at a church camp after I graduated high school. The summer after I graduated, I went to a church camp, and God spoke to me there, and I ended up going to a smaller Christian university in Texas called now renamed Nelson University. And I was there a few weeks, got called into ministry. My family does not have a ministry background, and so that's kind of the nutshell of that point, and we could kind of use that as a launching point moving forward.
Yeah, well, let's bring us up from that point to kind of modern day, and then we'll come back to kind of these different points of the story. But out of college, where'd you pastor from there? Where'd you pastor next? What are you doing now? Kind of walk us through that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I felt deeply called into to ministry, as I said, but my specialization was cross-cultural missions. And I loved being in contexts that challenged me, that wasn't like home. And so I love that. But and through that, I ended up doing urban ministry. I was able to go on multiple mission trips, and I ended up spending half a summer in Kenya and all of that. But we ended up, when it came time, we helped and assisted. My wife and I met her at Nelson University. She ended up being from a rural context herself, grew up in a town of 5,000 and in western Oklahoma. We didn't know each other. We had to move to Texas to meet each other. But anyway, and in that, so we did some inner city work, helped in church planting, and we ended up going to an established church in rural New Mexico, and youth pastored there for almost 4 years, and kind of bounced around a little bit, with always at times finding we even what I call failed church planters in Albuquerque, and
Church
so we
plant
went.
survivors, you know.
Yeah, church plant survivors, and so we love urban. We've served in the suburban context, but there's always been almost a relief whenever I'm in a rural context where I can just take a deep breath, if that makes sense. And so in the world we've lived in now for almost 10 years, we find ourselves in West Texas. Our denominational movement is Assembly of God, but we've been in West Texas almost 10 years now, and it has been the most fruitful, life-giving, exciting, encouraging, challenging, and everything in between. And so that's where we find ourselves now.
Yeah, and in that 10 years, I think you've been lead pastoring in a small town for a good portion of that, but then you maybe just handed off your church, and now you're kind of full time doing our shared role, which is kind of this youth director at a denominational level. And so, tell us a
Correct.
little bit about the town where you've been pastoring for the last, 7, 8 years or whatever it has been,
Yeah, so we pastored for almost 9 years in the county seat, and the county itself is and I just looked it up again because I'm like, it just sounds so huge. But anyway, 12,000 people in the county, and the county's almost 890 square miles. Now, most of the populated area is all in one little area, so to speak, but 12,000 people in the county, 890 square miles.
Dang.
And so, yeah. And so, so that's where we pastored for almost 9 years. We just this past March 2024, as we're recording this right now, we're in the new year of 2025. And we pastored until March, and I was a significant amount of those years was in the denominational leadership role that I'm in as well. So I did both. But anyway, so we moved there, and it was what's called a parent-affiliated church because it was a revitalization.
Sure. So it started small, started struggling, just trying to breathe some life into it.
And so we had a group of about 20 people when we moved in. We had this older church building, very small, and in a parsonage next door, and all kinds of, I had to mow the parking lot because it was not caliched properly way back when, that kind of thing.
Sure.
But anyway, so we were there. I guess the best way to put it is we were able to kind of jump in with both feet. We worked with people that lived in Section 8 housing from day one. And then as the Lord allowed, we got to connect with those that even own businesses and whatnot, you know. So we kind of had this full vast spectrum, especially in rural ministry. You have a lot of people that don't pay taxes, and then you have just, you know, a few thousand that do, essentially. And so, but we're called to all of them. And so that's we went in as a missionary to our community, missionary mindset. And I guess what that means is it really freed us up to just think. I don't know why, but instead of just going in thinking, hey, we're just pastoring this little revitalization, this church that had closed and then was reopened, and we have this parent-affiliated church, and the longtime mentor of mine is the pastor of that parent. He's the pastor of the mother church, and his name's John Murdoch, and he just said, Nick, go pastor the town, and you'll pastor the church while you do that. And when he said that, it was invigorating, it was exciting, and I'm like, let's go pastor the town, you know, let's pastor the county. And praise God, that's what the Lord allowed us to do, gratefully.
Well, that is man, first of all, thank you for sharing your story. Love that journey. But let's choose that as a starting point, because I think that we all recognize, especially as church leaders, the power of words and vision statements and ways of thinking about things. But I was struck by that quote, pastor the town and you'll end up pastoring the church, because again, I think that like it almost paints this weird picture of like pastoring the church as this kind of afterthought, and not even in a negative sense. It's just like we're putting this foot forward. And so maybe break down that quote. Can you unpack a little bit? And obviously then we'll get into some very specific areas, but can you unpack like what that means for you, what that should mean for us to have that kind of mentality, you know?
Sure. So yeah, when we went in, and I was literally like, that was the three words spoken over my wife and our two children and our dog, right? It just basically go pastor the town. And when that was spoken over us, again, just excitement, exhilaration. And what that did was, is it freed me up from just thinking, okay, I'm coming to this rural community just to take care of 20 people. Again, we love pastoring, and so it wasn't an afterthought, I guess, in the best way of looking at it optimistically and thinking of it in the best way possible. It was just like it was a release to just hey, every open door of ministry, run
Just
through
walk
it,
right through
right?
it. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't. You know, there were plenty of times, and people can vouch for this. Rather than walk, I'm more of a run guy.
That's fair.
So,
Sprint headlong, disaster or
and
not,
I
like
just yeah.
just go.
I just I even sometimes it wasn't a door. Sometimes it was a little bit of a crack, and I just run through it, you know. Anyway, I mean, we were on the ground just a few weeks, and I had at that time I had on I don't know why I did not have work boots on, but I had on a pair of Converse, and we were moving cattle, and it was just one of those things. Anyway, and I'm like, what am I doing? And boy, I look like a city slicker or whatever, you know. But pastoring the town meant that just whatever opened door. And so what I would do, so in order to pastor the town the first few months, right, before we even moved there, I'd contacted the Chamber of Commerce, received a packet in the mail, and it's because I wanted to see what was going on in the county. The director had sent it out. It's a full-time position. The director had sent out this packet, and so I open it up. I see all the things. We've got this going on, this agriculturally, oil and gas industry, the winery industry, and all of this. And so, and so anyway, I'm like, well, I'm going to meet with the director of the Chamber of Commerce. That's my first connection. So I drop in there, and I'm trying to remember. It took a long time, but I said, hey, what's your most important event of the year? And how can we help with that event? And they're like, well, it's the Harvest Festival. It's been going
Gotta
on
love
for
a good Harvest Festival.
Yeah, exactly. It's the biggest county event of the year. Been going on 70 plus years. And I'm like, well, you know, what do you need done? And there, and that, and she just starts talking. She's like, well, most churches set up a booth and all this other stuff. And I'm like, no, what's your biggest need? What's the biggest need of the chamber? How can we do it? And they're like, well, there's a, you know, she just kind of goes on and on anyway. And I finally lead her into, and I said, well, what, no, really, what's the biggest need? And she said, well, it's picking up trash. And I'm like, okay.
Done. Yeah.
And so absolutely. Now it was a bit interesting. We'd only been there, what, 4 or 5 months, and show up, and we still didn't know a lot of people. Obviously, I was still popping into different meetings around the county and in the town. And we go, and there is a certain aspect, especially at least that first couple of years, where I mean, we got asked. I was asked if I was working community hours.
That's
personally.
My favorite. Like somebody's like, "Hey, are you on a chain gang? Like, are you?
Exactly.
What are you doing? Like, who did you
That's
kill?
exactly.
And how did you end up here with 100 hours of community service?"
Right, right, exactly. And so it took a couple of years to build up the momentum.
Right.
But what we like to say is everything started with the trash. But
there you go.
We were pastoring the town, and we were pastoring the needs. It was like the needs of those who serve the town or the county. What were their needs, and how could we come alongside them to help them?
Yeah.
And from that, and even, you know, we'll get into it.
Yeah, for sure.
Museum and museum situations and
the Chamber of Commerce getting more and more involved.
Right.
Yeah,
City
we'll dive
Hall,
into it.
All of that.
No, but that's a good start, because honestly, and I think I had it emphasized recently on one of our previous episodes where it is so like counties are so accustomed to churches saying, what can I do? And everyone kind of looks sideways because they recognize that a lot of the ways that we quote unquote help still kind of benefit our own church first,
right.
You know, and
right.
And where you're saying, hey, I'm not looking to wear matching T-shirts, hand out pamphlets, you know, set up a booth and kind of draw everybody to our church. I'm just here to say, what is your biggest need and how can we meet it? And like that posture of serving, I think just like people, I think it's like the greatest hidden gem, because I don't think people realize just how critical that is to kind of this long-term weaving into a community. So yeah, no, that's exciting, man. Well, let's start here, because I think that your experience has a bit of a common denominator with probably a lot of other people's experience. But let's start with talking about like church reputation, right? Like especially in a revitalization setting, which a lot of rural pastors moving into a community are probably going to find a church that does need some revitalization, or might have aged, or might have become internally focused. And so let's start with having a bad reputation. Like, first of all, how does a small town church acquire a bad reputation? Why is that such a concern? You know, and like, and then obviously our next questions will be like, hey, once we engage the community, that usually fixes it. But like, how do we get to this rough place, and why should it matter so much to us?
Well, for rural ministry, there has to be a couple of just a honestly a posture. And I just want to reemphasize this. We have to want to be there. We have to like say, Lord, this is where you've called us. Lord, this is the field we are to plow, right? This is where we're planting seed. This is where we're investing our lives, root system, and where the harvest is going to come from. And so when you kind of have all of that mentality, it's like, okay, well, that's my posture. I'm here to serve. I'm love finds a need and meets it. And that's what we're going to do. And when we walked into our situation, you know, it wasn't the church had fell on hard times, which is very normal in rural ministry.
Sure. Yeah. Our margins are already razor thin, and then the tither dies or leaves, and you're just like, oh, shoot, we're out of money, and we're just...
Oh, yeah. One of our main tithers, he passed away a couple of years in, and I'm like, oh, Lord Jesus,
there's our budget.
Yeah, and we could count on him, you know, and he gave weekly, you know, and Lord bless him. In Jesus' name, he's hanging out with Jesus now.
Yeah.
But the bad reputation part, we come in, and obviously, well, a church finds itself in that situation because of gosh, I prayed about just being super transparent, not so much about complete my context, but just rural context.
Generally, yeah.
And so what it is in rural scenarios and communities, right? people know people, and your reputation, it's a, I mean, it's, it just happens. It, I mean, people know, people talk, and it's small town community conversation. The grocery store, the post office, the bank, whatever, right? And so we come in, and I knew that previous years we had had that church had had some leadership, and by the time our mother church took it over, they went ahead and changed the name. Thank the Lord for that. But the there was still a prevail. It was like there this previous pastor that had been there, and it wasn't a long time ago, but it was enough. It was a few years back. And but it was like he lived there and moved out the next, like the day we arrived, he left the day before. Because everywhere I went, the local flower shop, the one flower shop in town that did all the funerals for everything for the county. All the cem you know, I was gonna say all the cemeteries, not like there was a lot of them,
Right,
but
but there's usually a couple.
And so the cemetery's everything, and one of the first thing, I mean, the owner, he's like, that guy left us with $1,000 bill or whatever, you know,
Oh, yeah, just like unpaid debts, you know.
correct. The farm, local farmers co-op, there was $2,000 debt there, you know, on and on.
Wow.
And come to find out the guy anytime, you know, and I'm not trying to drudge up the past. I guess what
No.
I'm trying to do is say, when doing rural ministry, everybody knows the dirt on everybody's
Yeah.
church or who was at the church. And it even goes on to the point where we had a lady get saved at our church that had had a she had been an addict. Man, she's just a trophy of God's grace. She's with Jesus now, had got cancer, but trophy of God's grace. But I'm telling you, she did whatever it took to give herself her fixes.
Yeah.
And she was well known.
Yeah.
And we know the fact that she came to our church, it made it to where there were multiple family units that had bad. That had anyway, it rural ministry is messy.
Yeah, well, and it's I keep thinking when you say that, I'm remembering back to my own context. I'm like, "Oh yeah, if the county commissioner didn't approve the budget for the EMS director and both of them go to our church, well then now suddenly somebody's not coming for a month or 2 months or three. You know, it's so intricate. If somebody's family starts beefing with somebody else's family and you're just or somebody's kid got a starting roster spot and
Oh
somebody
yes,
else's didn't,
absolutely.
like it's insane how much these things spill over into just like you could just people just disappear and you're like, what? What? It's just like, where'd you go? It's just,
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, top five even to this day, individual there in that community. I'd been there 4 or 5, 6 months, maybe 9 months, 10 months, because I'd already built a relationship with this individual and spent time with him. And he just said, "Hey, you know, Nick, there's going to be people that cannot go to your church because of people that go there right now." And I said, "I
Oh, that's
understand."
just such a brutal reality. But like it's important to like have it in our minds that like this is how it's going to be and it's okay. That's how it's going to be, you know?
Absolutely. But yeah, so previous leadership had committed felonies, fraud, and even some other scenarios as well. And so we come in, and we couldn't have the agenda of, you know, let's grow the church. What we were
Yeah.
there to do is pastor the town, serve the town, give back to the town, find a need where it meets it, and because every person counts in that town, and every person counts in that county.
Yeah, no, I love that. Well, let's dive into this. Let's start to kind of dive down the specific ways in which you engaged. And so kind of to lay out our roadmap here, we're going to talk county museums. Love, I'm so excited for this conversation. One of my friends in the town where I pastored was the director of the museum for a while, and we just would have such back and forth conversations about like community impact. We're going to talk about church facilities and just like what we do. We're going to talk about benevolence. We're going to talk about economic development. It's going to be so much fun. So let's start with museums. Why should pastors care about their local museums? Again, especially if you're moving into a town from the outside, you're not like this isn't your history in a sense, you know, and it for sure can sometimes feel a little like, and I'm gonna kind of devil's advocate. It kind of feels pointless, where it's like, yeah, it's a museum, whatever. Everyone has the cousin from World War I, and they show his rifle over there, and the one dinosaur bone that got found there. You know, like it's just, it's like very, you know, it's very, it can feel very low on the list of priorities. And so, how does this help pastor a small town church when you kind of invest in this museum? You know, so what does that look like?
Yeah, so what that looks like is now anything that you're involved in, you have to. I won't say you have to. You don't naturally have to say, "Well, I love this." What you do is find what people care about, and you're like, because they care. I mean, that's the pastor role, right? If you care about this, I care about this, and that's, you know, you're sitting in a you know, in the stadium watching football, and your team is, you know, your rural town can't field a team for, you know, your high school, middle school can't field a team for nothing, but you're there because all of these other people love it, and their kids out there, grandkids.
I think the first school merch I bought was as a youth pastor for the town I pastored in, not the high school I attended. You know, like it
Oh
was like I attended high school
exactly.
and I never got merch, but then I moved to a small town and I was like, well, I gotta buy the stuff. You know, you
Right.
have to, you know, it's just
Right. Well, it's so yeah, absolutely. If you don't, it's over. So there's some definite bullet points here, but for us, I love museums, I love history, I love regional history. And for us, we were like, well, we better know this place because this is our home. These are our people. This is our harvest field. And so we found out there was a county museum, and we went multiple times as a family to go visit it. We met the people that were on the board there. We met the volunteers there, and all of them, generally speaking, were of more mature age and just a vast knowledge of just everything. And honestly, we have trash pickup, you know, we had a couple of things, but that museum, the fact that word spread among a certain portion of the crowd of our county and our town that we loved, that this new family that moved into pastor, they care about the history of our town. And we did genuinely, even like during Halloween, you know, they gave out candy there, so you had to actually
You
go
gotta
over
stop. You
to,
gotta go to the
yeah, you
museum. You gotta
yeah,
stop
go to the
by.
museum and stop. And we did that, and just and Lord, going to the Halloween conversation,
Oh no, yeah, we're fine.
it's just, yeah, it's all about whatever it takes to reach a town for Jesus, right? And so we naturally love that. And so we found out that every November, December, they did a drive for the museum for giving. So my family and I gave a donation. I think it was $25. And then I was like, well, if we can do that, the church can. And of course, the church finances were still, you know, we were still just kind of hanging in there and just all of that. And but anyway, I'm like, well, we got to do this. And for almost my, as far as I know, almost the entire tenure of us pastoring till this past March, we always gave to the museum. But I know, again, this is, I want to use the word guileless, I guess, if you will. Anyway, it was just us being simple and straightforward, that we weren't trying to do this to butter people up. We were doing it because people care about the history, and especially those in certain regions of America. People can still trace back of when their ancestors settled in that region, right? And so for West Texas, there are people that was involved in that museum that they knew when their great granddaddy moved out there, you know. And some of them, it was very much a pioneer spirit even now. And so for us to show interest in that, care about it, was a big deal.
I really love just kind of touching on this because I think that we're sometimes afraid because we're like, well, it does feel kind of insincere. And I'm like, but you're not walking in there to say like I think as soon as you get your theology right of I'm not the one growing the church, God's the one growing the church, then you're not doing these things because you think that they're going to produce church growth. You're doing them because people matter, right? Like
Yes.
we could almost use that incarnational ministry model. Like Jesus said people mattered, and so he went and lived among them. He learned about who they were and the soil they were attached to, and like just by default of being a carpenter in a small town in a backwater province of a big empire, like he did that. And so I think that every time we step into a county museum, Even if it takes a while, I mean, I'll be honest. Like when I moved to my small town, I wasn't interested in the history. You know, like that was not something that naturally came to me. It was something I had to work on to go, oh, if this matters to you, well, why does it matter so much to you? And you let people and their joy and their love and their devotion to the history of their place kind of inform you as a person. And it does change you. Like I can now agendaless, totally say guileless. I like that word of just like, no, I really did love the history of my town because the people there mattered. And like, it's so fun to dive into that.
Thank you for joining us for part one of this conversation with Pastor Nick Rogers. Obviously, in this first part, we've had the privilege of diving into this conversation about everything from kind of his story, his background, kind of starting out in a rural community, how to build reputation, and even really a fun conversation about museums. And I just want to invite you to come back for part two next week. I think you're going to hear a lot more about kind of the ins and outs of how to engage your community in a way that is just so awesome and so timely for a lot of where we're at as rural pastors and ministers. And so for this week, thanks for tuning into Rural Advancement. I just want to reiterate our mission every week that we are here for you. We are here to kind of not just speak to your context, but speak as people who understand what's going on. We hope that you're encouraged, inspired. You can always leave us a rating or review, but true to rural form, you can also pass this on to a pastor who needs it. Just word of mouth as we spread this set of leadership conversations as far as it can go so that we can build the kingdom. But for this week, for part one, I have been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Nick Rogers, and we'll see you for part two next week.